RE/MAX Concepts not only understands the real estate market, their highly skilled professionals are always on duty to ensure your home buying or selling experience is positive. The professionals at RE/MAX Concepts offer you ways to beat other home buyers into the home of your dreams through the Home Finder system. Get to what is hot now. Don't wait. Learn more at realestateconcepts.net. Realestateconcepts.net for home buying and selling.
No matter the size, age, or activity level of your best friend, you want a dog food that's natural, feeds great, and is full of all the goodness you demand. That's what's packed into every bag of Country Vet Naturals. Country Vet Naturals is just what the name says. Natural goodness in every bag. Grain-free? Sure. There's a grain-free cat and dog food and treats. Learn more and find a dealer at countryvetnaturals.com. Country Vet Naturals. Loved by pets. Trusted by owners.
Insight on Business, the News Hour, is brought to you by Tarot International. Achieve, lead, and outclass with Tarot. TERO.com. And the Iowa Business Journals. News and information for small to mid-sized businesses. IowaBusinessJournals.com.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. With us is Ben Crosby. Ben is one of the tarot trainers from Tarot International, and he teaches in the area of presentations, and in particular, persuasive presentations. I guess that's something that we all take part in at one time of our life or another, from dating all the way through our careers. Ben, welcome.
It's my pleasure to be here, and thank you for welcoming me. I was just thinking about the statement you made. Persuasive presentations are a daily part of our lives, so I appreciated that.
Yeah, it truly is. And sometimes we don't recognize that, but we are always, if you will, selling. And if it's not ourselves, it's a product, it's a service, it's, honey, can I go play golf tomorrow?
Absolutely. We're persuading all the time.
So let's talk about, how do persuasive presentations differ from informative presentations, for example?
Well, I'll give you two perspectives. One is that all presentations, whether they are informative or explicitly persuasive, are persuasive. Even when we're informing people, we're persuading them of something. For example, we're trying to persuade them that we're credible sources of information, that we can be trusted, that we have their best interests in mind. So at Tarot, we really emphasize this point. All presentations, all communication is persuasive. Technically, there are some presentations or some communication situations that are less persuasive than others. If you're actually making a proposal for change, that would be considered a formal persuasive presentation. And I would say in that situation, the key thing you need to do doesn't differ from any other presentation. You have to be trusted. So any tools you can use in order to communicate yourself as being trustworthy are going to help you make your case in the end.
And what do people need to know about becoming? And I don't think you can become trustworthy. You have to emote that. You have to be that, I'm sure. But there must be some tools that a person can use to accentuate that.
Certainly. We can talk about these tools from any number of perspectives. We can talk about the content you use, to the body language, to the sound of your voice. At Tarot, we talk a lot about the visual communication and the vocal communication. But we also do place an emphasis on content. And I thought today I could mention how you might organize your content in a persuasive way.
Let's do that.
One of the key tools you have at your disposal is fear. And I hate to sound cynical.
Wow.
I don't want to sound cynical, but we...
Remember, Ben, this is not a political show.
Absolutely, it's not. But you'll notice that whether it's in business, politics, or any other situation, if you're trying to persuade someone of something, they have to believe that without your proposal or your recommendation, they're going to lose some benefit.
Mm.
They're going to lose some advantage. So the first step is communicating that potential loss of benefit. In debate, we call this the harms or the needs.
Right.
You have to demonstrate that there's a need for something. If you can't demonstrate that, then no one's going to be interested in what you have to offer.
And when you start that conversation for that presentation, do you just come right out and say, oh, by the way, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, the sky is going to fall?
I'm glad you asked that, because there is a happy medium. We know this from our own experience as human beings who are consumers of communication. Mm-hmm. If someone's trying too hard to scare us, we see right through it, they're cynical, and we move on. So the key to giving someone a sense that there is a need is modulating it correctly and backing it up with real-life evidence.
So in other words, what you're saying is to become trustworthy, and again, if we play on the emotional aspect mm-hmm. of fear, which can cut both ways, as a matter of fact, but if we work on that by the harms and benefits idea, coming at it a bit more softly than mm-hmm. saying the sky is going to fall, mm-hmm. that should start to ingratiate our message to the person that we're speaking to?
Yes. It's key that we know our audience in this situation.
Correct. Yes.
What are your audience's values? What are their needs? If you know your audience well, you can communicate needs in a responsible way. You can tell them, for example, that, hey, I want to see this movie. And I know that one of your values is gangster movies. Or I know that one of your values is
Disney.
Critically acclaimed rom-coms or yeah. Disney or something. And so you
makes
have this
connection.
Need. You make an emotional yeah. connection with them and you say, look, if we go see this movie, then you're going to meet certain needs that you have. And if we don't go see this movie, then you're going to miss out on certain needs or benefits associated with following my plan here.
Interesting.
So appealing to them on their level of value is a good way of responsibly and not cynically communicating that they have certain needs that you can help them fulfill.
And we see this in play all of the time, all of the time. Every single, and as an advertising agency executive, I've been in that field forever.
Yeah.
One of the things that we tell our clients and we share with our clients all the time is look for the emotional attachment to whatever product or service that you have so that you can make that work. And to be able to do that, and you're so correct, Ben, you need to know your consumer or your audience
yeah.
or the person that you're having this conversation with.
What motivates them
yeah,
emotionally.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to do that, how does one get to know what your, excuse the word, target, mm-hmm. what your target's emotional needs might be?
There's a lot of research that goes into discovering just that, the answer to that question. It depends. If you have the resources of a major advertising firm or a major university, you can do focus groups. You can do surveys. But the best tool you have as an interpersonal communicator is talking with someone and asking them questions.
Mm-hmm.
Asking them questions that signal you're interested in who they are. Having a real conversation with a person reveals a great deal of information about that person. You're going to know what drives them if you ask them the right questions. So, for example, if we go back to the movie example, if you have a conversation with a friend of yours or an associate of yours, an acquaintance, and simply ask them, well, what sort of movies are you into? Open-ended questions that invite them to explore their own thoughts are going to give you lots of data. And those data will help you understand, in turn, what emotionally motivates them. And then you can make recommendations based on those data that you're getting.
Interesting stuff. And you know, one of the things, and people who are listening, you're listening to Ben Crosby, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, one of the tarot trainers. One of the reasons we so love coming to tarot and visiting with the trainers is this is really high-end training. This is not just, okay, go do X, Y, and Z. There's real attachment to statistical analysis here.
Mm-hmm.
You guys spent a lot of time studying what to do and then accentuate how to do it.
Yes, everything is research-based. A lot of the information and tools we provide are based on research that's been around for a long time, going all the way back to the ancient Greeks, for example, in some cases. But we also are following research that is cutting edge, that's brand new. And if you, for example, were to attend a workshop and graduate from a workshop, we would provide all the same cutting-edge research we're developing and finding with you. So we share information, we use it, we apply it, we consider it the bread and butter of what we do.
Well, it makes it all relevant.
Right.
Otherwise, if you're just one-offing – this stuff. You know, I mean, anybody can do that.
Right.
You have to give the rationale behind it. What detracts then? We talk about what attracts being persuasive.
Mm-hmm.
What detracts from that? I mean, I'm sure not being trustworthy, right?
Certainly, it's the opposite of the things we just discussed. Trust is probably your best tool, because when you can communicate to someone, again, that you have their best interests in mind and you've done research to know who they are and what drives them, they're going to trust you. The flip side of that is, if you're trying to make a case to them based on your interests and your needs and your emotional motivations, that's going to detract from your persuasive ability, because people see right through you. They know whether or not you are being selfish or whether or not you have their best interests in mind. So trust is key. And then the other issue that you brought up a few moments ago is you have to know your stuff. So you have to be armed and equipped with information. So demonstrating that you have their interest in mind and demonstrating that you've done research, those are your two biggest keys. Obviously, the opposite of those two things are going to detract from your ability to persuade if you look ignorant or like you don't have their best interests in mind.
Let's spend a moment on having their best interests in mind. I want to come back to this because I think this is where people so often forget that connection point. Because I am out to sell you a self-weasel winding torque inducer, by gosh, and you really need this thing. But I will use perhaps all kinds of mendacity to do that, So being factual and knowing your stuff, what happens if you're in this conversation and it's not necessarily always friendly? And you're trying to have a persuasive conversation with someone who may not really like you or your product or service, or has some kind of pre-idea of what's going on.
Certainly. That probably means you're talking too much. It probably means they're not involved enough. People are comfortable and at ease when they feel like they're being listened to. When they feel like they're being lectured to, that's when the defenses go up and the skepticism starts. So we teach people, in particular in our sales workshop, that they better be asking questions. Mm-hmm. Most of their selling should be based on good, targeted, open-ended questions that invite the listener, or in this case the customer, to explore their own perspective on an issue. When a customer's talking and they're reflecting and they feel comfortable doing it, they're not going to have ill feelings for you. They're going to feel good about
you.
You've made them feel good.
Good point. What about famous orators that are out there who have had the power of persuasion? Can you point to a couple and maybe give an example or two of how they have been persuasive?
Certainly. We'll use one from ancient times, and we can talk about someone more contemporary. Cicero is probably the most famous orator of all time. Even going back even further, you can talk about Demosthenes. If I were to pick one of the two, I would probably pick Demosthenes. And the reason I would do that is because he was terrible at first. Cicero wasn't great either, but Demosthenes was terrible at first. He was laughed out of the assembly. He had speech impediments. He was too quiet. The reason I bring him up is because he's a perfect example of someone who practices, someone who allows a failure to motivate them. So he's famous for then going to the beach and giving speeches against the sound of the waves and putting pebbles in his mouth, which I don't necessarily recommend in order to help with his enunciation. But the point is, he practiced and practiced and practiced with focus. And then he went back and he became one of the best orators of all time, and many would say the
very
best of all
time. Very interesting, yes.
So his key to success is one we haven't talked about yet, and that is simply put the work in.
Yeah, you got
to
work.
Practice. Come to a workshop, learn the skills, apply the skills, and use them every day. So that's a key to becoming successful, good old-fashioned hard work and practice. In a more contemporary context, we can look at our last two presidents, for example. They've both been very successful orators. The reason I bring them up is because we won't talk about politics, we won't talk about ideology here at all. They should both be credited for knowing their audiences. Somehow what gave both of these politicians tremendous success was the fact that they knew an audience that other people didn't really know. For Obama, you might say it was young people who were willing to be motivated. A lot of people overlooked young people during his campaign and prior. because they felt like they were apathetic. And Obama, using different means and tools, because he knew this audience was there, was able to reach them and motivate them. And Donald Trump's the same way. He identified an audience that a lot of his Republican counterparts overlooked. And because of their knowledge of these audiences and these audiences' values and their needs, they had tremendous success. So again, I would go back to knowing your audience and what drives your audience. That's key.
What a dichotomy.
Yeah. That's why I brought them both up, because they're so different, but they have one thing in common. And that is that they knew somehow intuitively that these audiences were out there that other people weren't reaching.
What about people who don't give formal presentations? Mm-hmm. And many of us don't do that for a living, or we don't do that in front of a group. But it's still important to be persuasive, yes?
I think we said at the top of the show, all communication is on some level persuasive. So yes, absolutely. What are you saying when you show up late to a meeting? What are you saying when you show up like you look frazzled and tired and stressed? You're communicating all the time. One thing I like to tell people who attend our workshops is your presentation doesn't end until you're safely in the car driving home. We're always being observed. We don't like this fact necessarily, but we're communicating all the time. And so in order to be persuasive in regular everyday situations, situations, events that go well beyond a formal presentation, we need to pay attention to how we interact with people, whether or not we're looking them in the eye, whether or not we're shaking their hand and smiling. Even if we don't feel like smiling or looking someone in the eye, if we do want to make an impression, there are science-based tools, experience-based, research-based tools that work. And that means you show up, you dress the part, you look people in the eye, you smile, you shake their hand, and you communicate that you have their best interests in mind and that you can be trusted. That's going to win you far, far more than your counterparts.
And all of these things that we've been talking about for the past 15 or 16 minutes are things that Tarot International brings to their clients and the individuals that come here to learn how to speak their way to success, yes?
Absolutely. We teach a variety of workshops, and there's a lot of overlap in these workshops in strategic areas. We build this in intentionally. For example, how you look is important. 55% of the impact you're going to have on an audience is based just on the way you look. So what is your body language communicating? What is your dress communicating? We have an image consultant on hand who works with people, looks at their wardrobes, looks at the colors they use, all the tools you can imagine to persuade someone, whether it's in an intimate, interpersonal, professional situation, or in a personal situation, by the way, these tools apply across, or a formal presentation where you're speaking to a large audience and you have a PowerPoint presentation up behind you. All the tools we have available are designed to help you take full advantage of all persuasive situations.
His name, ladies and gentlemen, is Ben Crosby. He is one of the tarot trainers at Tarot International. We want to find out more about Ben and tarot. We will have those links on the radio blog. Ben, this has been... Ben, this has been... This has been really informative and helpful, and I think full of information that if people will utilize some of these tools, they should see a pretty immediate return on their ability to become persuasive.
Thank you. It was my pleasure, Michael, and we appreciate you coming and allowing us to share this information with people. I think it's an excellent show. I think it's an excellent opportunity.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. Our thanks once again to Ben Crosby, one of the tarot trainers from Tarot International. Told you it was going to be great. When we come back, we've got a marketing tip for you. What is it about? It's about feeding the beast. Click on through. That's coming up next on the Business News Hour.